Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's Blood Bond. Narrated by Thomas Penny. With performances by Dylan Lynch, James Lewis, David Coyne, Andy Clements, Tim Carlin, Elliot Dash, Christopher Graybill, Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, James Konacek, Ken Jackson, M.B. Van Dorn, Eric Messner, and Mort Shelby. Blood Bond number 8, San Angelo Showdown.
Dingo Whaley was the first to spot the vehicle in the distance. He had to squint a little in the bright Texas sunshine, and still could not be sure if it was a wagon or carriage.
What is it, boss? Buffalo?
Shut up for a minute, Murdoch, and let me think.
Pierce watched the scene from several feet away. He knew that Mel Murdoch was not the brightest individual in Texas, and would probably not listen to Dingo's command. Pierce didn't like Murdoch. Almost nobody in the gang did. So he sat back to watch the show. Murdoch didn't disappoint him.
Hell, I'm so sick of seeing the rump end of those shaggy beasts. I sure like to get the tail end of something aside prettier. Hey, when are we going to hit some town so that I can get...
Without a second's hesitation, Dingo reached out and slapped Murdoch right off his horse. He picked himself up and reached for his gun. Murdoch glanced at Pierce, then at Dingo, who was apparently ignoring him. Murdoch took his hand away from the gun. Though both men were over 6 feet tall and had the well-worn look of buffalo hunters, Dingo was the bulkier of the two. He weighed in at over 300 pounds of bone and muscle. He was said to be the best fighter and one of the fastest shots in the West. Murdoch and other members of his gang knew he was also mean as sin. He was a bad man to tangle with.
I thought I said to be quiet.
Well, sure, boss. I didn't
Just
mean to...
Just shut up.
Murdoch got back on his horse and rode off. Dingo continued to watch the dust in the distance. He finally made out details of a single coach followed by a single rider. If it was another sodbuster, a raid would hardly be worth the effort. A more fancy rig could mean a merchant with a hidden cash box or some merchandise that could come in handy. In any case, Murdoch did have a point. Dingo and his men had seen too many damn buffalo. The last big hunt had been just a few days before. It was good money, real good money, but the work was hard and tiring. Now it was time for a different kind of sport, and maybe some easier money. Another member of the gang rode up and stopped beside Pierce. He looked almost frail compared to the larger men, though he was not a small man, and closer inspection revealed that he also had been hardened by years of living in the open country.
What's cooking?
Boss is in a cranky mood, Jessup. Wouldn't rile him if I were you. Murdoch made that mistake.
Again?
Dingo turned his horse and rode the few feet back to the other two men.
Jessup, you're familiar with his country. How close would you say we are to the nearest town?
There's a settlement or two within a half day's ride of here. Nearest town any size is San Angelo. Only thing worth much there is Fort Concho, which means you can buy beer and women.
I'm more concerned about the law.
Hell, there may be a ranger, too. Can't get away from those bastards these days. But the soldiers? The damn fort ain't big enough to have very many. And I'll wager most of those are new recruits who couldn't find their way home with a map. Rangers and soldiers are pretty busy with the Indians and Mexicans anyway.
Sounds good to me. Pierce, get the rest of the boys together. We're going to pay us a visit to those pilgrims down yonder.
Sam Two Wolves shook his head slightly as his horse made its way through rotting corpses at the site of a recent buffalo hunt. The horse was skittish, and the smell was terrible, but Sam's firm hand kept the horse steady. From several hundred feet away, Matt Bodine sat on his own horse. For once, he made no wisecracks, for he knew the ache that such a sight produced in Sam. For many Indians, the buffalo was the source of life itself, and with the killing of the buffalo, their life was also disappearing. Sam was the son of a great and highly respected chief of the Cheyenne. His mother, a beautiful and highly educated white woman from the East, who had fallen in love with the handsome chief and married him in a Christian ceremony. As an Indian, Sam was deeply aware of the bond between men and nature, between Indian and buffalo. Matt was the son of a rancher and met Sam when they were both just kids. The two quickly became friends, with Matt spending as much time in the Cheyenne camp as he was on the ranch at home. They grew up together, and Matt was adopted into the tribe as a true human being, according to Cheyenne belief. Matt and Sam were joined by a ritual of knife and fire. Though Matt's background was different than Sam's, he understood his blood brother's feelings better than most.
You can't do anything about this now, Sam. Let's move on.
I know, but this is such a waste. I'd like to get my hands on the men that did this.
Yeah, so would I. But it's all legal, sanctioned and encouraged by the government.
Let's get out of here before I get sick.
Matt looked around, shook his head, and then hurried to catch up. He would give Sam a few miles to regain his natural good humor. Sometimes it was better not to push, and this was one of those times. Peter Easton shuffled some papers around on the makeshift desk in front of him. His ample stomach made the maneuver difficult. Carl Holse, Easton's assistant, knowing Easton's sensitivity to his weight, said nothing. The carriage shifted on the rocky ground, tossing the papers into the air. Easton tried to grab them, as did Holse.
Damnation! How's a man supposed to get any work done in these conditions?
I suggest again, sir, that you might be better off postponing work until you reach Fort Concho. All the pertinent information is in the summary I prepared for you.
Holse was much slimmer than Easton, though his hair was also slicked back and both wore expensive suits. Holse picked up a slip of paper from beneath another stack and handed it to his superior. Easton repositioned his glasses and again read through the report.
Damn these Mexicans anyway. They can't control their own bandits, and they get upset because one or two of our men cross the border in pursuit.
He reached into the stack, pulled out another slip of paper, and glanced down a list.
One man in particular, a Texas Ranger named Josiah Finch. I might point out that the complaints aren't limited to just Mexican authorities. The department has received complaints from Indian Territory, New Mexico.
I get the idea. This ranger doesn't understand limits. Though I understand that all these Texans think they're too good to follow the rules. I'll conduct my investigation, make my recommendations, and get back to Washington as soon as possible.
He looked out the window at the dry countryside.
I'll just as soon be back there now. Damn. I wish I'd let that senator's wife alone.
A hole exploded in the side of the wagon, filling the inside with splintered wood. This time, the papers scattered, and nobody bothered to pick them up as the horses spooked and started to run down the road. Easton and Holse hit the floor. Outside, Dingo Whaley and his men were quickly overtaking the vehicle. The escort on horseback squeezed off a shot at the attackers, who returned the fire. The driver, not willing to be a hero and be shot for his efforts like the escort had been, tried unsuccessfully to stop the team. Dingo solved that problem by aiming his big buffalo gun at the lead horse and squeezing off a shot. The driver flew through the air like a rag doll. The hitch broke, and the wagon overturned in a cloud of dust and smoke.
I could sure go for a hot meal and a cold beer. I'm sick and tired of this trail grub. What? That breakfast we had this morning was...
You cooked breakfast.
Oh, right. Well, what about that dinner yesterday?
You cooked dinner yesterday.
Damn right. Maybe it's time you did some of the cooking.
What? Listen to your griping?
But Sam smiled, and Matt grinned in return.
That's more like it. You're mighty poor company when you're in one of your moods.
My moods? Hell, even at my worst, I'm better than you when you get all googly-eyed over some saloon singer.
Well, now I've done it. You're back to normal. Me and my big mouth. All you need now is a good fight to put you in a really fine mood.
As you were saying, brother, my mood's rapidly improving.
Yeah!
Me and my big mouth. Yeah!
Oh. Carl Holtz touched his forehead and felt wet. He pulled back his hand and saw blood. When he volunteered to assist Easton in his department investigation, Holtz had hoped to make some points for himself to further his career. He had not planned on getting shot at. He blinked and found himself looking into the barrel of a Colt revolver held by one of the biggest men he had ever seen. Others had their guns pointed at Easton.
Come on out. Nice and easy. I haven't decided whether or not to shoot you. If you cooperate, we might let you walk away.
Holtz pulled himself out of the carriage. At least a dozen men, all wearing masks, held guns on them.
Who are you? And what do you want?
Names aren't no matter. And what I want is your watches, your money, anything that you might have stashed in that fancy wagon of yours.
Outlaws!
I'll handle this, Holtz.
Think you're hot stuff, do you? Then handle this.
Murdoch, cut it out. Pierce, you take some of the boys and take this fancy rig apart. The rest of you boys take whatever valuables you can find off these yahoos.
Can I beat up on them too?
Just do what you're told.
Holtz was amazed to see Pierce and three others manually set the carriage upright again. Some of the papers that Easton had been working on fluttered to the ground through the open door.
What's this? You some kind of lawyers or something?
Easton was still on the ground, rubbing his chin, trying to stand.
We're with the government.
Really? Jesse, gather together some of these papers. Might prove interest in reading.
You can't do that! It's government property!
Murdoch ripped the watch from Easton's pocket and pushed him back to the ground. He pulled his gun and aimed it at Easton's head.
Aren't we citizens?
Convicted felons do lose certain...
Jessup walked over and grabbed Easton's shirt collar.
What makes you think we're felons? Maybe you should apologize.
Of course. My mistake.
And citizens with every right.
One of the men came out holding a heavy bag.
We struck pay dirt, boss. Looks like gold coin.
Holtz shook his head. It had been his idea to bring along the gold to help with expenses. In the West, he knew, government IOUs weren't always considered acceptable currency. The loss of the gold could be a mark against him. Even so, he wasn't going to get himself killed over it, though he should at least make an effort.
Anything else?
You realize that this is a federal offense.
It makes me shiver in my boots. Now answer my question. Anything else of value here?
Nothing. You've cleaned us out.
What about these yahoos? Should we shoot them?
Why waste bullets? We're miles from anywhere. These tenderfoots won't last a...
Dingo stopped in mid-sentence as he seemed to listen to the air. Some said he could hear, see, and smell buffalo and men miles away. It made him one of the more dangerous buffalo hunters and outlaws working in that part of Texas.
We're getting company. I don't know how many, but I think we've had enough fun for one day. Let's get out of here.
You're right, Dingo. Let these greenhorns chew in their own fat.
Holtz knew Easton was sensitive about his weight, but was still surprised to see Easton unexpectedly stand and jump at the outlaw who made the comment about him being fat. He grabbed the outlaw's legs and tried to drag him from the saddle. The outlaw was apparently even more surprised. The other members of the gang didn't even bother to look back as they rode away.
Now you've done it! I've had enough! I don't care what anybody says! I'm gonna kill you!
His threat was interrupted by two bullets. One came from behind a rock, the driver who had been hurled from the vehicle. The other shot was from a tall man riding toward him on a fast horse. Sam Two Wolves knew better than to rush blindly into a fight, but this time, Sam was angry, and he didn't really care. He instantly sized up the situation. One man with a gun pointed at another man, ready to shoot. A third man, bloodied, apparently helpless. The wrecked carriage, the dead rider motionless on the ground. It would be unusual for one man to do so much damage, so the other gang members would probably not be too far away. Matt also realized the situation.
Look for the others!
Sam waved him away and didn't slow his horse for a second. He was willing to take his chances. He was still too far away for a clear shot, but it was worth a try. He pulled his rifle and took aim. It was almost impossible to shoot a rifle accurately from a running horse, though Sam did better than most. The shot roared almost at the same time as another, fired by a man lying behind a rock. Both shots missed. The outlaw leaped behind the cover of the damaged carriage. Sam shot three more times, not expecting to hit his target, but giving the two other men a chance to scurry to safety behind the rock. Sam slid off his horse and joined them.
Got yourself in some kind of mess.
You called me fat.
I'm guessing you were also robbed.
The outlaw fired two shots blindly in the direction of Sam and the others. Sam returned the fire as if he didn't have a care in the world.
I beg your pardon. My name is Carl Holtz, and this is Peter Easton. We're representatives of the government on the way to Fort Conjo to conduct some business.
I suppose that was an ill-advised thing to do, attacking that man just because he called me a name. He could have been killed.
I understand. I'm kind of sensitive sometimes myself. Problem is, I just shot the bastard. You never know.
Are you all crazy? We just been robbed, we're being shot at, and we're trapped. Y'all yapping your gums.
Not entirely correct. We're not trapped at all. In fact, that fellow over there is the one in trouble. You stay here, I'll take care of him.
Sam fired a shot and quickly reloaded. The outlaw returned the shots. Sam zigzagged across the short distance between the rock and the overturned wagon, dodging the bullets. The outlaw fired again, but this time the hammer fell on an empty chamber. Sam covered the remaining ground in a long leap.
Yeah!
Matt had kept up with Sam for most of the way to the place from which the shots had come. When he also saw the damage, but only one outlaw, he changed direction at the last minute. He had a feeling that other members of the gang were near and might unexpectedly return. His guess that they were still close by was proven right when he spotted the dust cloud in the distance. The gang was riding fast, though they did not have much of a head start. Even so, there wasn't much need for Matt to give chase. His intent now was to ensure that they did not turn around and surprise Sam in his skirmish with a lone bandit. At one point, the dust cloud paused, as if the gang members were considering a return. But then the group continued on its way.
No honor among thieves.
He watched the cloud grow smaller and then disappear, before turning back to join up again with Sam. Dingo and his gang had stopped briefly to rest and water the horses by a small stream. Dingo was looking at the back trail. Pierce also looked, but could see nothing. He looked up at Dingo with narrowed eyes.
Aren't we going back for Murdoch?
No.
Oh, why not? There can't be that many.
There's only two. I didn't see him, but that's my guess. But I get the feeling that these two could mean trouble for us. And I don't intend to give up what we gain just because that fool Murdoch can't stay on a horse. Of course, if you want to go back, nobody's stopping you.
He's no friend of mine. The way I look at it, he'll get what he deserves.
I thought not.
What if he talks?
If he gets any ideas about squealing, we'll just take him out. No more problem.
Well, what's the plan now?
We take the money we got from the buffalo hunt and the gold that those greenhorns so kindly provided to us and have ourselves some fun. There's some whiskey and women waiting for us.
Fort Concho?
That's too close. No use taking chances. Let's head south. How does old Mexico sound to you?
Sam landed on the outlaw. The force pushed him to the ground. He punched Sam in the chest with a closed fist, but Sam was young, strong, and muscular. He shrugged off the blow and rose to his feet.
I don't know who you are, but you gone and tangled with the wrong guy. Nobody messes with Mel Murdoch.
Yeah, I've heard those kinds of threats before.
Murdoch was heavier than Sam, but he was also slower. Sam ran toward Murdoch, then pivoted at the last minute. Instead of the punch that Murdoch expected, he found Sam beside him. Sam pounded the side of Murdoch's head with a series of short, quick punches. Murdoch finally managed to dodge one of the blows and kick out viciously. Sam caught the foot and twisted, forcing Murdoch to the ground. In his anger, Sam was less cautious than he normally would have been. He twisted the leg until it felt as if it would give. But in a surprisingly quick move, Murdoch also twisted and kicked with his other leg. This again hit Sam in the chest, but with enough force that it pushed him back. Murdoch, though limping, moved in with some more blows. In spite of Murdoch's efforts, however, Sam wasn't getting tired. He just kept coming back for more, handing out more punishment than he received. Finally, seeing he couldn't win, Murdoch pulled out a long skinning knife and rushed. Sam was no stranger to knives, however. Sam sidestepped, grabbed the outlaw, and threw him toward the wagon. He hit with a thud, but jumped up and ran again toward Sam. A bullet whizzed past Sam and hit Murdoch in the shoulder. He dropped his knife and fell backward against the wagon. Leaning over the top of the rock was the driver, smoke curling from his gun. Matt watched the distance for several minutes to make sure that the gang members did not return. By the time he returned to the scene, the fight was all but over. Sam and the outlaw were slugging it out, with Sam getting the better end of the deal, when the outlaw's charge with a skinning knife was halted with a single shot.
The others got away.
That's not like you to let anybody get the best of you. You must be slipping.
I suppose I could have covered the miles in seconds and brought them all in single-handedly, but I figured you'd need my assistance back here. I know how helpless you are when you get grumpy.
I'm still not in a great mood. You want to see how helpless I am?
If you wanted to kill this fellow, your aim was off. Just goes to show you shouldn't shoot when you're in a bad mood.
I didn't shoot him.
I did.
The driver limped around the rock, then collapsed on the ground, holding his leg.
Damn him and his whole bunch. I'd like to shoot the whole lot of them.
Sam walked over to him while Matt pulled his revolver and stepped cautiously toward the outlaw. His gun was on the ground. Matt picked it up, put it in his belt, and pulled down the outlaw's mask. He was a stranger to Matt, though he had seen many others like him in his travels. He was dressed like a buffalo hunter, but unlike some of the more respectable hunters, he was little more than a thug, looking for easy money any way he could find it, and he wasn't too particular about where he found it. He was barely conscious. Matt ripped a bloodied shirt to expose the wound. It had been a clean shot. The outlaw would live. Matt grabbed the man by his shirt and lifted him to his feet. Matt shoved him toward the rock where the others were standing. Sam kneeled by the driver.
Take it easy, partner. It's busted, sure enough. But it hasn't broken the skin. I think you'll live.
Name's Gwen. I'm glad you fellas showed up when you did.
You know who the gang was?
I heard one of the fellows called Dingo. There's all kinds of thugs and outlaws running around this part of Texas these days. But only one Dingo, Whaley. They got the jump on us. If y'all hadn't showed up, I'm not sure they would have shot off.
Without warning, Sam twisted and pulled the leg to bring it back into alignment.
Sorry, partner, but it'll only hurt for a while. We'll splint that leg, and in a few weeks, you'll be as good as new.
Matt noted the two other men standing near Sam. Both were wearing expensive suits, now torn and dirty. The shorter man's face was bloody, and the larger man's face was bruised.
This fellow on the ground called himself Mel Murdoch. These two are Peter Easton and Carl Holtz.
Matt handed Murdoch's gun to Easton.
Watch Murdoch. Shoot him if he tries anything. Holtz, you let Sam look at that face. His bedside manner isn't much, but he can do some decent doctoring. I'm going to check out the damage to your coach.
As he expected, the damage was beyond repair. The horses were in poor shape. One of them had died instantly as a result of a gunshot wound from a buffalo gun. Another had broken his neck. Two others had broken their hitches and gotten away. They would be fairly easy to find because they would not have traveled too far from the scene. There would also be the horses that had been ridden by Murdoch and the dead guard. It would be enough to at least get these greenhorns and the prisoner to the nearest law. The vehicle was now little more than firewood. What hadn't been destroyed in the wreck had been damaged by the outlaws, with huge gaps in the floor and the seats torn out. They had apparently been looking for something, probably money or gold. The two passengers stood out in this part of Texas like a sore thumb. It was a wonder they hadn't been attacked before now. Matt picked up some of the papers that littered the ground. The guard was still spread out on the ground where he had fallen with a hole in his chest. When Matt returned to the group, Holtz's face had been patched up.
It'll take a while to find the horses and bury the dead man. Might as well forget about getting on the road again tonight. Hope you boys don't need to be someplace right away.
Looks as if we have no choice. But I'm not complaining. We thank you for your help.
You can show your appreciation by helping clean up this mess. You'll bury that poor guy out there in the grass while Sam and I find your horses. We'll just camp out here for the night.
Sam found the outlaw's horse grazing near the camp. It was a fairly good horse, probably stolen from somewhere along the line. The dead guard's horse was found further away in the general direction of San Angelo. He had the look of any army horse. Both still had their saddles on. Matt found the two horses that had broken off from the team in the opposite direction. Unfortunately, one of them had a broken leg and could barely move. Matt never liked to put any animal out of its misery, especially a good horse, but sometimes there was no choice. He carefully removed the remaining harness, led the good horse a safe distance away, then unhitched the crippled animal.
Sorry, fella.
The two blood brothers met at a pre-designated spot with the recaptured horses. Sam saw that Matt was leading only one horse.
The other one didn't make it.
Broken leg.
I heard the shot. Sorry.
This hasn't turned out to be a real good day, has it?
You got that right.
Sam stepped down from his horse and crouched to the ground. Matt joined him.
What do you want to do about these greenhorns?
I have already stuck my nose in their business. So that means we're already involved. They told me they had some business in San Angelo, which is the general area we're heading. They didn't say what their business was.
Matt pulled out the papers he had picked up from the ground.
Looks like government business of some kind. Most of this looks like so much bull.
Should we be reading government business? I think there may be a law against it or something.
Since when are you a stickler for the law?
Only when it serves the cause of justice.
Now who's talking bull?
If it was good enough for Thomas Jefferson and Tom Paine, it's good enough for me.
Sometimes I wish you never went to the university.
An educated Indian can be a dangerous thing.
A smart-ass Indian is even worse.
You're just jealous of my articulate way of expressing myself.
Well, this is interesting. Check this out.
Not much here except for... Well, I'll be damned. Josiah Finch. That old son of a gun. The other pages are missing, so I don't know what it means. I wonder if he's gotten himself in trouble again.
Don't Texas Rangers make their own law? This could be interesting. I say let's ride with these two for a while and see what develops.
While Holtz and Easton finished digging the grave, Sam prepared the campfire, using wood from the wrecked carriage. When the two Easterners returned to the camp after sundown, they were dirtied and blistered. Sam gave them credit, however, for completing the tough job without complaint. They sank wearily to the ground. Sam passed out beans and bacon that he had cooked for supper.
Thank you again. You not only save our lives, you also feed us supper. Where are you all headed?
We're just drifters. We just come back from up north. Thought we'd see what this part of Texas looks like. Don't have any plans or any place we need to be.
Well, Carl and I were on the way to Fort Concho. I thought we were well guarded, but with Quinn and the armed escort...
His name was Rafferty. He's a good man. And he was shot in cold blood. Didn't stand a chance.
I'm sorry.
At least we got one of his murderers. It'll be good to see him hang.
Gwyn glanced over at Murdoch, now tied and gagged with his own mask. That had been Gwyn's idea, since the smelly mask was enough to make even a buffalo hunter sick. It was small enough, Justice, but seemed fitting.
Losing Rafferty and the services of Gwyn is bad enough, but we've also lost our transportation and our financial resources. We had some gold to use for expenses involved with our project. The outlaws took that as well.
How much gold?
Not much. Maybe $1,000.
Some project.
Holtz only shrugged.
What about the gold?
We'll report the loss. Somebody will investigate.
It'll all be spent by the time the paperwork's done.
That's the least of our worries now. I doubt that we'd make it the rest of the way on our own. We need some guides, somebody to help see us through. We've talked about it, and we'd like to hire you to ride with us the rest of the way to Fort Concho. We'll have to arrange for some additional money to be sent to us before you can be paid, but I can assure you that you'll be taken care of.
What's the going rate these days for government service? I forget what the Army pays, but I think the Texas Rangers pay about $10 a month.
Oh, I can assure you that your pay will be much more than that. This will be a special service that you'll be well paid for.
That's a mighty fine offer. But we don't hire out our guns, not for any amount of money.
Easton's face fell in disappointment.
But we will volunteer our services. We are civic-minded citizens, after all, and are willing to do our part.
Oh, excellent!
Matt and I will be glad to ride with you to Fort Concho and see that Murdoch is placed safely in jail. We might even stick around for his hanging. Just keep in mind that we're not working for you. So don't get any fancy ideas just because you're with the government.
You all are a rare breed of men. In fact, I'm not sure I've ever seen anybody jump in so freely and help others when it puts your own lives in danger.
Guess we've just got a soft spot in our hearts.
Or rocks in our heads.
Matt and Sam woke before dawn to prepare for the trip to Fort Concho. They already had the horses saddled and breakfast ready by the time that Holtz and Easton moved slowly and painfully out of their blankets.
I never expected this.
Why do you think the senator requested you to personally make this trip, He had an idea that West Texas might be as close to hell as anything you could find on this earth, and he thought you deserved it.
Well, I think he's gotten his money's worth. I'll be glad when this is all over. Sir, how long to Fort Concho?
A good 2 or 3 days' ride, I think. Hope you two are used to horseback.
No.
Sam walked up, leading the horses.
We have a little problem. We have enough horses, but one of them doesn't have a saddle. Are you all going to draw straws to see who gets to ride bareback, or what?
Maybe it'd be fair if they took turns. That way it'd give everybody a chance to be equally sore.
No, that wouldn't work. Gwyn has that broken leg. It wouldn't be fair to him.
Hey, wait a minute. Sam, you have the Indian blood. Maybe you should volunteer to ride bareback. You should be used to it.
Actually, to be modest, there's not a horse I couldn't ride, with or without a saddle. But in this case, I think I'll pass. I'm kind of partial to my own mount.
Gwyn hobbled up to the fire and poured himself a cup of coffee.
This discussion open to all?
Be our guest.
Why don't we hogtie our friend Mr. Murdoch, sling him across the horse? It would certainly discourage any thought he might have of escaping.
What a good idea.
And that way the rest of us could at least have saddled horses.
Murdoch glared at them over the mask tied around his mouth.
I suppose it'd only be fair to ask his opinion. This is a democracy, right?
Matt stepped over to where the outlaw was stretched out and untied the gag.
You monkey-ass good-for-nothing SOBs! I'd like to chop those smart-mouth tongues out of your mouth! Ow!
Majority rules. Murdoch goes bareback. If he's as tough as he thinks he is, it won't bother him a bit.
Josiah Finch was seated in the simple chair across the desk from Colonel Elvin Leeds, the commander in charge of Fort Concho. The two of them, Finch with the Texas Rangers and Leeds the United States Army, represented the only law enforcement authorities on the frontier for hundreds of miles. It was a woefully inadequate force to combat Indians, outlaws, and Mexican bandits. Finch was a small man, only about 5 feet 4 inches tall, and the gun at his hip seemed almost as big as he was. But Leeds had known Finch for a long time, first by reputation and then in person, and realized that few men in Texas were as fast with a gun as Finch, nor as fearless when it came to a fight. Leeds had nothing but respect for the Ranger, but orders were orders.
I appreciate you coming to me as soon as you got to town. There's been a regular crime rampage recently, and I couldn't begin to tell you if there are organized gangs working or not. I suspect most of them are just mean SOBs out for what they can get. Hell, San Angelo has been shot up so many times by buffalo hunters that I'm surprised there's anything left. I've ordered my men to stay clear of several of this town's watering holes, and some of my men are so green that I'm not sure how long they'd last. I've had dozens of crimes reported to me that I can't investigate because they're not within my jurisdiction. And many others, I don't have the manpower to investigate.
I'm on the trail of about three different gangs. The biggest is probably the Dingo Whaley Bunch. I don't know if they're going to pass through this way or not, but it seems reasonable. I figure I can at least find something out here.
He reached into his desk and pulled out a sheaf of papers.
I'll work with you as much as I can, you know that. But I've been getting some heat from a lot of different directions. There's been several complaints about violation of state, federal, and international law. And guess what?
I couldn't begin to.
Your name is mentioned more than once in these complaints.
Oh, do tell.
I know when you're after those desperados, it's tough to turn back at the border. Hell, we've all crossed the river plenty of times if we feel it's necessary. But for some reason, they've singled you out for special attention.
It must be my winning personality.
I'm just trying to warn you that some are trying to tighten things up down here. In fact, I've heard the rumor that Washington is sending down investigators to look into the situation.
Boy, that is rough.
Yes, I agree. But my options this time are more limited. I don't have the manpower or the maneuvering room to give you much backup.
Since when have I needed much backup?
You do have a point, Josiah. What do you say we go get a drink?
Now you're talking sense.
It had been a long, hard ride, especially for Mel Murdoch. He did learn, however, to keep his mouth shut, so that his foul gag was finally removed. Sam took no special care of the outlaw, but over the several days it took to reach San Angelo, the shoulder wound started to heal. Carl Holtz and Peter Easton managed to salvage a change of clothes from the wrecked coach, but not much else. They decided not to change until they reached their destination, so by the time they arrived, they did not seem near as dapper and well-to-do as when they started. Easton looked at the small collection of adobe houses and businesses, most of them saloons.
I thought you said we were going to hit San Angelo this morning.
This is it.
But there's nothing here.
This is a big city compared to a lot of places we've been. And over yonder is Fort Concho, I think. That's probably where your business will take you. After we drop off the prisoner, my business is going to be a good beer and a decent meal.
I think I'd like a bath.
Good luck. You have a choice of baths in this town. The North Concho River or the South Concho River. Mr. Gwynn, you said you live here. Who's in charge?
Last I heard, Colonel Leeds was the officer in charge, on a temporary basis until they can fill the position. His office is down there.
Then let's get it over with. I hear that beer calling my name.
Leeds was sitting at the desk in his office, signing some papers, when Matt, Sam, and the others walked in.
Pardon me, sir, but you have nobody in front to announce us.
The colonel looked up from his paperwork. It had been a long time since he had seen such a motley crew. Matt and Sam looked like a pair of drifters, which were common enough in these parts. Their eyes twinkled good-naturedly, but the guns they wore low on their hips said they could also be dangerous. There was also a buffalo hunter with a bloodied and torn shirt and two greenhorns who were obviously the worse for wear. Jack Gwynn brought up the rear.
Hey, Jack! You I know. Who are your friends, and where's Rafferty? I was expecting you days ago.
We were attacked by outlaws. These two here are the ones Rafferty and me were hired to pick up and bring here. But we were attacked. Rafferty got hit first thing. He's buried out there somewhere on the trail. The outlaws would have probably killed the rest of us, not for Matt and Sam here.
Matt and Sam? Could you be Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves?
That's us. How do you think he guessed, Sam?
Maybe our fame has spread far and wide.
I've been hearing stories about you two. You're not as famous yet as, say, General Grant or Sam Houston, but you're spoken of.
We'll take that as a compliment. But enough small talk. We'd like to get rid of this smelly trash here. Can you take him off our hands?
Leeds walked over to Murdoch and looked him up and down.
And who are you? Who are you working for?
None of your damn business.
Would you like your mask back?
This is one of the gang that shot Rafferty. I heard him call one of the others Dingo, if that means anything.
Leeds walked back to his desk.
It could. I have a friend that would be quite interested in that information. How about the others? Any dead or wounded?
The others all got away. Murdoch's the only one that didn't. He probably would have if Easton hadn't jumped him.
Leeds took a closer look at Easton. He was overweight and didn't look like he could take on an outlaw, but one thing Leeds had learned in the army was that you never knew what people could do until they were faced with do-or-die situations. People always surprised you.
This story sounds more fascinating by the minute. I think we can find a place to keep this fellow for a while. We have a circuit judge come through here every so often. I think he should be here again in a few weeks.
Weeks? Oh, damn it. I demand my rights.
I wouldn't complain if I were you. The longer it takes for the judge to get here, the more time you have until you're hanged. Corporal, give me 2 men in here pronto, and clear out one of the cells for a new resident. Damn paperwork. It's all this job seems to be sometime. Wait, here it is. So, you're Peter Easton and Carl Holtz. My orders are to show you every courtesy and to cooperate with you to the fullest extent. I have received little explanation of why you're here, though I suppose it has something to do with keeping international peace or some such bull.
First thing we need to do is to recuperate from our journey. I never thought I could be so sore in so many places. We also need to get word to our superiors in Washington about our status. Also, to replenish our funds, since the outlaws got the money we had brought for expenses. After all that is accomplished, we will start to review some of your records and see if we can make contact with Mexican authorities to obtain their official version of events. You can be sure that our report will be fair and impartial.
A report, huh? Wonderful. I'm sure that will have a major impact on this crime spree we've been having here.
A corporal and 2 other men entered.
Take Murdoch here to the stockade. We'll be holding him until civil authorities can take appropriate action. Show Mr. Easton, Mr. Holtz to the guest lodging. They are representatives from Washington, D.C., so we will attempt to make their stay here as pleasant as possible. Matt, Sam, will you join Jack Gwynn and myself for a drink? I'd like to hear your story. I need to file a report, of course.
Of course. Buy us a beer and we'll tell you all the stories you want.
Buy us 2 beers, and some of the stories might even be true.
The saloon from the outside was adobe, like most of the town. It was much nicer on the inside, with soft kerosene lighting on the walls and a long, polished wood bar along one side. It even had a mirror behind the bar and a painting of a semi-nude lady above the mirror. The room was already filled with customers. Matt and Sam noted that it was an unusual choice for Leeds, since there wasn't another officer in the place. In fact, there wasn't another army man present at all. There was the usual mixture of hard cases, cowboys, and drifters. Some of them were in a surly mood, but most seemed to just want to mind their own business, eating their meals and drinking their drinks. A buxom woman brushed past them as they entered.
Say, Rosie, I got some friends with me tonight. Got any of the good stuff left?
She reached up and kissed him on the cheek.
Oh, for you, honey, I've always got the good stuff. Good to see you too, Gwynn. Hurt your leg.
Can't keep a good man down, you know.
I see now why you like it here.
Rosie treats me right. She's a very special woman.
Lead selected a small table in the rear as Rosie brought the drinks. Sam and Matt each took the glasses offered.
Can we get a couple of beers next round?
Sure thing, sugar.
Fucking bastard. Fuck you.
This is a nice, quiet place you got here, Mr. Leeds.
Quiet for this town. Hang on a while and it'll get better.
I can hardly wait.
Now, tell me about this shootout you had. What do you know about the gang that robbed Holtz and Easton?
One of the girls brought over a tray of beers. She was a brunette with a heart-shaped face and an hourglass figure. She set the glass in front of Sam, bending over deeply to do so. Her dress was low-cut and left little to the imagination.
Hey, handsome. You need anything, you call Mary. You got it?
No, a beer is fine.
Just keep me in mind.
I don't want to hear any more, brother. Not after the way I've seen you get all stirred up about a saloon singer.
She was a singer who just happened to work in a saloon.
Doesn't matter. This gal is probably interested in my good looks, and you're just jealous.
Yeah, maybe you look like a rich eastern tycoon.
Matt looked up, but Mary ignored him, watching Sam like a hawk. Sam attempted to change the subject.
To be honest, Mr. Leeds, we didn't ask Murdoch too many questions. We kept his mouth shut most of the time. Besides, we're new to the area. We're not the law. We brought the guy in. You can ask him all the questions you want.
A cowboy stumbled past the table, tripped, and sent his glass of beer sailing across the room. He landed on the table inches from Leeds.
Damn, it's you, Leeds. Thought I told you to stay away from my girl.
I've told you before, Kurt, that Rosie is not your girl. I don't know why she wouldn't be interested in a low-life bum like you, and I don't intend to ask. Rosie is my girl, and even if she wasn't, it'll be a cold day in hell before I do anything you want. The only reason I don't pound your face in now is because you're drunk, which would make it too easy.
Me and some of my friends have been talking, and we've decided that you can take your army brass and stick it.
Leeds pushed the cowboy away. He slid from the table and fell to the floor. He crawled a few steps, stood, and left by the back door.
A friend of yours?
I have lots of friends in this town, and I haven't even been here that long. Some people just don't like the uniform.
There were many saloons in San Angelo, and not even a Texas Ranger could visit all of them in one night. So Josiah Finch, in his usual direct fashion, started at the ones rumored to be the worst. He never drank much, just enough to make it look like he was drinking, though he never lost his edge. Though several would-be bullies approached him, something in his eyes made them continue to move on without saying a word. Finch, in turn, didn't say much, but listened a lot. Within minutes of Matt and Sam's arrival in town with the prisoner, the news had spread. Finch heard about it while he was nursing his beer at the second saloon he had visited.
I'll be damned. What luck. With all the West to wander around in, I find those two boys right here in San Angelo.
It didn't take much to determine that they were having a drink with Leeds at Rosie's. That didn't surprise the Ranger, since that was where the Colonel usually spent his off-duty hours. It would be as good of a place as any to catch up on old times with the boys and compare stories. It was still early, however, and Finch wasn't in any hurry. So he ordered another beer and listened to the chatter going on around him. One conversation in particular intrigued him. It had something to do with rumors of a gold shipment coming in, but nobody knew when or where it would be stored. A logical choice would be the town's only bank, though it was not one of the most secure buildings around. Rumors were only rumors, but sometimes rumors had elements of fact, and it could lead him to some of the gangs that he had been chasing. Finch paid for his beer. It was weak and warm, but in this case, the Ranger didn't mind, because he was more interested in the talk than the beer.
Oh, oh, señor. Oh.
In old Mexico, just south of the border across the Rio Grande, Dingo Whaley was sipping tequila and rubbing against the señorita on his lap. He and his men still had plenty of money left and were enjoying themselves in every way possible. A knock on the door interrupted Dingo's pleasures, but he was getting tired of the woman anyway. It was time for somebody new.
Get on out of here. I'll come back to you later.
Oh!
The woman slipped her dress back in place and opened the door. Jessup smiled at her as she walked by.
Interrupted something, boss?
Nothing important. There's more where that came from. Why aren't you enjoying yourself more?
I wasn't out hunting buffalo for as long as the rest of you. I remembered what a woman looked like. Besides, I've been thinking.
You got money, all the booze you could want, and all the women you could want. What else is there to think about?
More money, more booze, more women.
I'd hate to have all this dry up right when I get used to it. And to be honest, I'm not real partial to the idea of more buffalo.
You got my attention. I can see your point and that you've been chewing on this for a while. Pour yourself a drink. Pull up a chair. I'm listening.
It involves those guys we robbed, the ones that got Murdoch. Something about that's been bugging me, so I finally got around to reading those papers I picked up. Apparently, there's been a real big stink brewing between the Mexicans and the states. Something about territorial jurisdiction and how Mexico is demanding the states stay off their soil.
That's an old story.
Right, but I'm not sure it's ever been to this point. I don't know much about this stuff, but I can figure the angles. So can you. Think about it for a minute. If those two clowns were sent down to investigate, maybe the government's serious about not allowing the law to give chase across the border. That means a smart operator could work out of Mexico, and nobody in the states could touch him.
But what about the Mexican federales?
How about a partnership?
A partnership? With who?
The local authorities. Grease the wheels, so to speak, so that they'll look the other way.
Cut of the profits in return for protection. Sounds good.
We could put those damned buffalo behind us. Forever.
We'll make plans tomorrow. For now, send that woman back in here. I'm suddenly feeling real enthused again.
At Rosie's, the crowd continued to grow, and Mary continued her flirtation with Sam, though Sam was doing his best to ignore her. It wasn't that he didn't find her attractive, since she was quite a pretty woman. Rather, he didn't want to have to endure the endless kidding that Matt would throw at him. Even so, as the night wore on, his reserve grew less, and he started to flirt back, much to the woman's delight. It wasn't late yet, not even 11 p.m., when Leeds stood up.
Hate to leave good company, but morning comes mighty early in the Army. I'll get back with you about the Murdoch situation. Ah, hell.
His eyes were fixed toward the bar. Sam looked up and also saw trouble brewing. Kurt, the drunk cowboy, had returned with several of his friends. They had cornered Rosie at the bar. Mary joined them when one of the men grabbed Rosie by the arm.
Excuse me, fellas. I need to help the girls.
He didn't bother to wait for an answer. He pushed his way through the crowd.
I don't like the odds. I count six of them and only one of Leeds.
That's not all. Leeds didn't tell you everything about Kurt. He and his men have been involved in a petty theft operation, trying to steal from the soldiers. Leeds called him on it, and Kurt swore revenge. Kurt may be drunk, but he and his friends are still dangerous.
Then I say let's even up the odds a little.
Hell, you'd do anything to impress a woman, wouldn't you?
Matt and Sam could hear the talk from the bar over the noise.
I told you to get out of town, Kurt. You and your men. We all know that damn talk of yours about Rosie being your girl is just so much hogwash, trying to goad me into a fight. Well, you've succeeded. You touched Rosie, and that's it for me.
Kurt reached for his gun.
You fight Leeds. You fight me and my friend. That evens up the odds some, don't you think?
This isn't your fight. There's no need to get yourself killed. Just get lost and live for another day.
I don't think so. Looks to me like you owe the girls here an apology, so just say your piece and you walk out of there.
The people near the bar started to slowly edge away, though the crowd made movement slow.
You want us to apologize to them? These dance hall girls? These whores? You gotta be kidding.
Kurt's hand suddenly slipped to his holster. As if on signal, the others also reached for their guns. Matt and Sam, however, were ready for it. Kurt and his men returned the fire, but for two of the men, it was already too late. They fell lifeless to the floor, bullets through their hearts. Kurt jumped behind the bar, shooting as he jumped. Leeds fired back, barely missing the mirror behind the bar. Two other of Kurt's men headed for the door when they realized that they were outgunned. They made the mistake, however, of continuing to shoot. Matt and Sam continued to fire their guns, each bullet finding its mark. One man made it out the door, dead. The other was wounded as he stumbled from the room. A fifth man drew down his gun and held up his hands, which saved his life.
I give! I give!
This left only Kurt behind the bar. He shot wildly, the bullets barely missing some of the customers trying to hide underneath the tables. gets shot back from time to time, forcing Kurt to keep his head low and behind the counter. Leeds moved cautiously, positioning himself to get a clear shot at where he thought Kurt would appear. He finally stuck his head around the bar.
Stop right there, Kurt!
Kurt ignored the order.
I'll get you!
Leeds hit the floor and shot once, hitting the outlaw in the chest. He fell backward, landing on the bar. For long minutes, the room was still, filled with the smell of gun smoke. Slowly, when everybody realized the shooting was over, they started to move again.
At least you all didn't damage that fine painting behind the bar.
Matt and Sam turned almost at once.
Josiah Finch!
The ranger was sitting at the only table that had not been overturned, drinking a beer, acting as if nothing at all out of the ordinary had just happened.
I see you boys still can't stay out of mischief, can you?